Well, good morning, everyone. Looks like we are at 9 o'clock. See, there's a few people there. Maybe not everyone is here yet, but I think I should probably get started. So last time we were talking about how to solve the tight binding model in 1D. At the end, I started talking about what happens if there's multiple sites in the translation invariant unit cell. I'm actually going to postpone the rest of that particular discussion until tomorrow's class. And instead, I'm going to spend today talking about what happens in two dimensions. But before I do that, I want to fix a few details from the previous class that I didn't discuss. So one of those is, how do we add spin to the model we talked about? And the other one is, how do we put in some units into our momentum? So let's talk about spin first. So our spinless model that we talked about last time was just this, a sum of CJ daggers CJ plus 1 plus CJ plus 1 daggers CJ, where, of course, CJ J dagger 0 is this local orbital phi J. So now we're going to define a CJS dagger, note that has two indices, and this S is for spin. So this acting on 0 is phi J tensor with a spin for that site, which is either S equals up or down. So recall that T came from a matrix element between phi j and phi j plus 1 of some single particle Hamiltonian, built like some atomic thing with 1 over r potentials. So spin does not appear here. Which means that the matrix element is diagonal in spin. As a result, our H with spin included just looks like this. It's exactly the same as before, except now every term has its extra index s, and the s's don't mix. So in other words, all we really have is two copies of what we had before. One copy of a spin up and one copy of a spin down. So this means is basically the solution is the same. But we can fill each K orbital twice.
Would it be possible to lower it aboard a tiny bit?
Oh, yes, of course.
Thanks.
Yes, let's see. That should be good. Okay, very good. Okay, so I started I think not all of you are here yet. So let me repeat what I said before all of you had arrived. At the end of, so last time we did the 1D case, the simple 1D case, this model. And then I had started doing a case where we have in one dimension multiple sites that you have to translate by two sites to get translation invariance. But I've decided I'm actually going to postpone that topic until tomorrow's class and instead spend today talking about the two-dimensional case. And then we'll come back to the multiple sites case tomorrow. Okay, so that's how you add spin. Okay, and then the other thing that we can do that's sort of important if we want to have better physical intuition is to talk about adding units to our solution. So what I mean by that is to solve, we found translation eigenstates. Like this, where we take some linear combination of our CJ daggers with these exponential factors, and this gives us the CK dagger. So CK dagger 0 is a translation eigenstate and also an eigenstate of H. And then we found that H is equal to sum on K of minus 2t cosine K CK dagger CK, where in all of this, the values of K are these 2 pi over capital N, the number of sites, times some lowercase n, which is an integer. Let's see. Right. However, we want to think of this as a Fourier transform. From real space to momentum space. Therefore, it's nice if J could have units of length and K of 1 over length. So what we're going to do is we're going to put in the lattice spacing so my lattice looks like this 1D chain and I got the spacing between sites be lowercase a. I know this is a different notation than I used in the class when we were doing the derivation of the type binding model last week. There I use the capital R for this, but this A is the more conventional choice in this context. So in that case, We've got X, the position along the chain, be A times J, since J is an index for which site we're on. So this is a starting position. And then we're going to let K be 2 pi over N A times lowercase n. So we don't really change anything when we do this. So then we have CK dagger equals still 1 over root N sum on J, let's say, of e to the I k a j, which could also be written as e to the I k x, c j dagger. So all I've actually done is I've added a 1 over a in my definition of k, and then every time k appears in my equations, I just put an extra a there. So this isn't really doing anything, but eventually it will turn out to this is useful because then we have a length scale which we can compare with other length scales to make approximations and that kind of thing. So it sort of will be useful in the future to think of it this way. So in that case, my Hamiltonian in momentum space is sum on k minus 2t cosine ka CK dagger CK. Any questions about this? Okay, well, if there are no questions, then I will go ahead and move on to the new topic for today, which is type binding in two dimensions. So what we're going to start with is the square lattice, which is the simplest case we can do. So we're going to picture we have an array of sites like this. So I have nx sites by ny sites in a square grid. I'm going to define total n to be the number of sites, the product of nx and ny. And I have periodic boundaries in both the x and y directions. My Hamiltonian is still going to be hopping between all nearest neighbors. So I now have four terms. The first term is hopping. So this J is going to label X, and this L is going to label Y. So this CJL dagger, CJL dagger acting on zero equals phi JL, which is a filled orbital at x equals aj and y equals al. Where again, A is going to be my lattice spacing here.
So you're still acting on the vacuum state, yes? Or does that say A in the ket?
Your vacuum state. This is zero.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, so then I have my four terms in the Hamiltonian. So the first two are hopping back and forth in the x direction. That's this way and this way. And then the other two terms are hopping back and forth in the y direction like this. So I'll note that I do not include anything like diagonal terms like that. This is not included. Of course, we could invent a model that includes that, but I'm not doing that here. I'm also going to neglect spin. So like we just talked about how we can add spin in the model. Of course, we can do that here too, but since it doesn't change anything about our solution, for now it's just keeping track of the extra indices that I don't want to write down. Okay, so so we're going to define, or we're going to solve this the same way we did before. So I'm going to define the operators tx equals sum on j and l, c j plus 1 l dagger, CJL, and TY is sum on JL, CJL plus 1, dagger, CJL. So this hops electron left. This hops an electron down. And the Hamiltonian is the sum of four operators, TX, TX dagger, TY, and TY dagger. We also want to note that TX and TX dagger commute, likewise for TY. Additionally, TX and TY commute, and TX and TY dagger. which means that h, tx, and ty can all be simultaneously diagonalized. For the proof of these things, this tx, tx dagger, the proof is identical to the 1D case. And for the commutator of tx and ty, I actually included this proof in the solution to tutorial 2. So you can see it there if you want to look at it, but otherwise you can just work it out, and it's not too bad. Okay, so if we know this, then let's look for eigenstates of tx and ty. Which I am going to just assume is going to be a momentum. So I'm going to write it this way. I'm going to write it as ckx, ky dagger is equal to 1 over root nx and y. I think the easiest actually in this case, I shouldn't assume this yet. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. Normalization coefficient times sum on j and l of, let's call it AJL, CJL dagger, and then of course these both act on zero. I'm being silly. I don't need this known. This A includes the normalization, so forget this constant. Sorry about that. So this is some generic form for my eigenstates. And what happens when I apply tx? So tx acting on ckx, cky dagger is on the one hand, because it's an eigenstate, is equal to lambda sum of AJL CJL dagger zero. But on the other hand, by directly applying this definition of tx, we see it's also equal to sum of a j plus 1 l cjl dagger 0, which implies that a j plus 1 l is equal to lambda aj. Hence, if we apply this many times, that a n l is equal to lambda to the n a zero l. But remember that a n l in fact is equal to a zero l because we have periodic boundary conditions. Which implies that lambda to the n is equal to 1. So this is identical to what we did in one dimension. Nothing is different. And this, again, means that lambda is equal to e to the I 2 pi over capital N times some lower n, where this lower n is equal to 0, 1, dot, 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 n minus 1. So I'm going to call this, this by the way should be nx. I should be clear about that. And I'm going to call the lowercase n also nx. So I'm going to define this kx then to be 2 pi little nx over big nx. And then, like we did just in the 1D case earlier, I'm going to put in this lattice constant here as well in the definition of k. And then the tx eigenvalue is e to the I kx a. Yeah, and then we do the exact same thing for y. I mean, the math works out the same way, except that we just have the number of sites is now capital NY instead of capital NX. Okay, and then we can also get the actual eigenstates because once we set one of these AJLs, then this sort of recursion relation that each one is given by lambda times the previous one gives us the whole eigenstate. So get the state from AJ plus 1 L equals lambda, I'll call it lambda X, AJ L, and AJ L plus 1 equals lambda Y, AJ L. And the result is CKX, comma KY dagger is equal to 1 over square root of nx and y, sum on j and l, e to the I kx aj plus ky al cjl dagger. Which has eigenvalue e to the I kxa plus kya.
The eigenvalues.
Sorry, this is not correct. Let me not do that. I'm getting ahead of myself. Okay. Right. Then to get H in this basis, we're going to substitute in. The inverse relationship that CJL dagger is equal to 1 over root nx and y, sum on kx, ky, e to the minus I, kxaj, plus KYAL. CKX dagger, CKXKY dagger. Okay, so we make this substitution. Maybe I should get a whole board just for this, because it's going to be a bit of a mess. Be visible. Okay, good. Okay, so let's go ahead and do substitution now. This is going to be a bit of a mess here, but H is equal to minus T, sum on J and L, and now we'll start doing all the substitutions. So we get 1 over NX and Y, sum on KX, KY, e to the minus I, kxa j plus 1. So this is the substitution from cj plus 1 dagger L, plus kyal, ckxky dagger. Times some kx prime, ky prime, e to the I, kx a j, plus ky a l plus 1. Sorry, that's not right. So l. Okay, now I'm going to put it on primes here. Okay, so this whole piece is CJ plus 1 L dagger, and this piece is CJL. And then there are three more terms that are like this. So I'm not going to write out all the three terms right now because we're going to simplify this one a lot, and then I'll write down just the simplified versions of the other three terms. So our goal is to write in terms of only k and k prime. Or kx, ky, kx prime, and ky prime. So, we're going to move all J dependents and L dependents to the center and try, or to the inside and try to get rid of it. Okay, so to do that, we're going to write this as h equals minus t over nx and y, sum on kx, ky, kx prime, ky prime, e to the minus I kx a, e to the, oh yeah, just that, times sum on J and L, E to the I. Kx prime minus Kx. A J. Plus I times ky prime minus ky al. Okay, so, and then we need our ckx ky dagger, ckx prime ky prime. Now this piece, we can split up into two. This is equal to the product of sum on j, e to the I, kx prime minus kx, aj, with sum on l, e to the I, ky prime minus ky, al, which in the same way as in 1D is equal to nx, delta kx kx prime times ny delta ky ky prime. I'll finish it here. So then the whole thing is equal to minus t sum on just one copy of kx and ky. Of e to the minus I kxa ckx ky dagger. So that was just the first of the four terms. If we include all four terms, then what we get is
aren't we still missing the annihilation operator in the expression?
Sorry, say again?
In the bottom left corner of
Yes, here?
Yeah.
Sorry, what is your question though?
Isn't there still the annihilation operator?
Yes, there is. Good. Yes, thank you. You are correct. Thank you. Okay, so this is our final simplified expression, or almost, but now, of course, we can combine these things. So this is now 2 cosine of kxa. This is 2 cosine of kya. So in total, we get e of kx comma ky is equal to minus 2t cosine kxa plus cosine of kya.
We could in principle have just we proved in the tutorial that if we know the eigenstates, we can write any Hamiltonian as EI AI dagger AI. And we knew yes. that Hamiltonian is TX plus TX dagger plus TY dagger. So
yes, yes, so we could have gotten the energy that way as well. That's correct. The reason why I did it this way instead of that way is because this way is going to generalize more easily to the case where you have multiple sites per unit cell, whereas the other way would not.
Oh, okay.
But yes, in this case, that would have been the faster way to do it. That's true. Okay, so to actually understand what this energy looks like, what we're going to do is, so far, we've only talked about kx and ky. They happen to be the quantum numbers of these translation operators. But now we're going to, for the first time, view kx, ky as a vector k. This is really a momentum space, that it's a fully fledged space that we can talk about. So in that case, this e is a function of my vector. Which I can draw something about its values. So here's kx, ky. And we're going to consider the box minus pi to pi. Cross minus pi to pi. Previously, when I wrote down originally the eigenstates, we said that k is in the range of 0 to 2 pi. But of course, everything is 2 pi periodic since everything comes in these exponential factors. Therefore, we can just as well do minus pi to pi and minus pi to pi. So what you'll find is that this diamond region here is where the energy is negative. And in these corner regions is where E is positive. And then my level sets. Look like this. So this diamond is one level set. That's the E equals zero level set. Oh, the level sets look something like this picture. So what that means is, depending on the number of particles, the many-body ground state will be filling all of the states up to one of these level sets. So just then some quick definitions. So the energy separating filled and unfilled is the Fermi energy. Which I'll call EF. And the level set at EF is called the Fermi surface.
One question, because this is fully momentum space, so it's not like phase space, but still it just seems that we get something like, you know, closed trajectories or open trajectories, like in phase space for E less than zero and E bigger than zero. Why is this? Or is that just because of the periodicity that they're actually all closed?
So in this case, they are actually all closed. But there are cases where you can get open trajectories. I'm not sure how to answer the question of why. That feels more philosophical than, I mean, but in this case, so in this case, they are all closed. It's just the fact that they appear open is a function of how we drew the boundaries of our periodic space. But yeah, open sort of open case does exist, and actually we'll see it on the tutorial this afternoon. So I guess like the physical consequence is you can see it if you apply a magnetic field. Well, this is also which we'll talk about. Probably at the last lecture this week, if you apply a magnetic field, then the motion of an electron in momentum space will either make a closed or orbital or an open orbital, depending on whether the Fermi surface is open or closed. But that's something we'll come back to that at the end of this week. So maybe that'll answer your question. Okay, so I am going now to, in the last 10 minutes, do the same problem again, but with a nicer notation, which is going to extend. So like this, in this case, we sort of just took our what we know from the 1D case, and we applied it to 2D. But to do more complicated 2D problems, which we'll start doing in the tutorial, and then continue in tomorrow's class. What we're going to need is some sort of more generalizable notation in the case of two dimensions. So I'm going to return to the picture of my original lattice. And I'm going to define this as the vector A. Which is equal to lowercase a, the lattice constant, times 1, 0. And this is going to be the vector b, which is A times 0 comma 1. In that case, we can write our Hamiltonian as this. So once we've written it this way, we can forget about the fact that we had x and y as particular coordinates. So note this gives me more flexibility. So I could also do something like this. I could define A like that. And I could define B like this. In which case, my translations would be TB and T A minus B. That my Hamiltonian would be defined in terms of these translations. So each choice define some unit cell of the lattice, and then these are going to be called primitive lattice vectors. One caveat is that the unit cell defined, so the unit cell is the space like this. Here. So we only use the word primitive. If there is no smaller unit cell, that's also translation invariant. So what I mean is, this would be primitive, but this is not. Okay, so there is, in some sense, a best choice. Which goes under the name of the Wigner-Seitz cell. which is all points closer to a given lattice point than to any other. And this is a good choice because the unit cell has all symmetries of the lattice. So, for example, on the square lattice, the Wigner-Seitz cell would be this, because every point in this square is closer to this point than to any of the other points. Okay, and then to define the lattice vectors, once we know the Wigner-Seitz cell, the natural choice is to take ones that translate this whole cell and therefore are perpendicular to the boundaries of the cell. So indeed, so this whole procedure of Wigner-Seitz and whatever has actually just reproduced our original intuition about what our translation vectors should be for the square lattice. But the reason why this is important is because when we start talking about three dimensions, and more complicated shapes in the square lattice, this is going to get confusing very fast. So having something like this to fall back on will be useful. Okay, so that's it for today. I guess unsurprisingly, I did not get through as much as I had wanted to, but we're going to pick it up here again in the next class tomorrow morning. But also we'll be working with the stuff that I was talking about today in the tutorial. So in particular, we're going to be doing this same square lattice case that I worked out, but we're going to do it again in three dimensions in the tutorial on a cubic lattice, where some interesting things happen. And then starting tomorrow, we'll come back and we'll do more interesting lattices in 2D, including like triangular lattice, for example, or honeycomb lattice, which also includes multiple sites per unit cell. One other note I want to make quickly is that, so originally I had put the deadline for your homework assignment as Thursday. I'm going to extend that now because, well, I'm about 1.5 lectures behind where I thought I would be. So given that, I will think about what the deadline will probably be, but I think it'll end up being a week from today. So I will keep you posted about that.
And I thought I just, no, I think, isn't like choice of the shortest basis for these lattices or so also kind of the idea behind lattice-based post-quantum cryptography? Because apparently this is a really hard problem, I think, choosing this short set of basis vectors.
I have to say, I don't exactly know the answer to your question. So I have read about that before, what you're talking, I know what you're talking about. But I don't remember exactly how it works, so I don't know if I can actually answer your question. But I think it's true that in a general lattice, that's not a, like not simple lattice, like the square lattice, this problem, it can be, this may be a difficult problem, but of course then for a nice symmetrical lattice, like the square lattice, it's not.
Yeah, I think it's called the shortest vector problem, and this is incredibly hard to solve, so that's like the new thing to base cryptography on.
Yeah, I think it's I think it has to be in a high dimensional space for this to be hard, right? I remember I've read about this before, but I don't remember the details. Yeah. Oh, fortunately, we're only using nice symmetric lattices.